Welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 79. This is for the week of April 16th, 2007. I am joined today by, of course, Jeremy Williams.
Hey, guys.
Norm the Intern.
Hello.
PC Gamer columnist Gary Whitta.
Hello there.
And newly promoted Dan Stapleton.
Hi, everybody.
Yes, he was formerly associate editor. He is now senior associate editor.
Which implies that we have an associate editor that I can push around, but it's not true.
Not true.
All I can push around is Norm.
Yes.
Aw, thanks.
Norm, get me a sandwich.
I did.
That's right, you did.
Get me another.
Norm, are you still an intern, technically?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Time for you to get a promotion, I think.
Well, he's now a columnist.
He's a columnist.
Yeah.
One step at a time.
He wanted to be, just so you know, we gave him the option recently of a couple different things, and he decided he wanted to stay Norm the intern.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, so.
For branding purposes.
Yeah, it's important. It's important for branding purposes.
Got to register that domain.
Yes. So I think the elephant on the airwaves this week is obviously the tragedy at Virginia Tech. Now, ordinarily, there would not be reason to bring Jack Thompson into this debate, nor would we want to bring him into it. But he has done some wacky things this week that just prevent us from leaving it alone.
We generally don't even like to say his name, but he's just been so bad this week. It's shameless, absolutely shameless. And, you know, if we can just point out that he's being shameful, is that giving him too much attention?
No, but I think we should also talk a little bit in depth about what he's actually done.
Oh, yeah.
So this is being reported right now on mercurymeltdown.com. They've said, just to give you a little lead in here, once again, anti-game activist and Florida attorney Jack Thompson has injected himself into the current drama surrounding the shootings at the Virginia Tech campus. Thompson has appeared on Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN, and then most recently, on Chris Matthews' Hardball, which, Gary can talk about a little bit later, to discuss his belief that the shooter, 23-year-old student Cho Sung Hui, trained himself, via the use of violent video games.
Now, what's most ridiculous to me about this is that within hours of the shooting, Jack Thompson was on Fox News talking about how this is all video games' fault. This is probably 10 hours before they ID'd the shooter. He had no idea who he was, but automatically it's games' fault. He's got to be camped out outside all the news agencies' headquarters, just waiting for a tragedy like this so he can further his own ridiculous agenda. It is repulsive.
Yeah, and apparently you were saying, Dan, that there was a story up, I think, on the Washington Post about how some high school friends had said that years ago he played Counter-Strike.
Right.
And then that story even came down.
Yeah, that part of it has since been removed, but he's just latched onto that and says, oh, his high school friends said he played Counter-Strike. So not only am I going to blame this on Counter-Strike, I'm going to send a letter to Microsoft, which later published the Xbox version of Counter-Strike, to blame them for this somehow. He's completely off his rocker. Either he's crazy or he hasn't done his homework at all. And in either case, should he be talking about this situation?
And Gary, obviously, you were responding before we started recording about his interview on Hardball. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I just saw the clip of his appearance on Hardball with Chris Matthews, and you know, I, like Dan says, it's absolutely appalling for Jack Thompson to have gone on Fox News when, you know, the campus was still being cleared and there was still an emergency situation there, and many hours before they even knew who was responsible, how many shooters, what was going on, he immediately jumped into his predictable talking points about how video games were to blame. And that's obviously based on no evidence at all. But even worse than that is the fact that now that there is evidence and supposedly from what we can see, quite a bit of evidence that exonerates video games of any involvement in what may have played into his mental state. You know, there was that one mention of it on a Washington Post article, which was then very, very quickly retracted. And since then, you know, all we've heard about is, you know, a lot of kids that knew him and spent time with him in the suite saying, well, yeah, he spent a lot of time on a computer, but we never once saw him playing Counter-Strike or any other game. They just did an inventory of his personal effects, and there's no games in there either. So even now, in this abundance of evidence that games had nothing to do with it, Jack Thompson goes on Hardball and continues to claim as fact that Counter-Strike is responsible. You know, there's a direct quote. He said he was playing this game and seemed to be claiming to know more about what was on Cho's hard drive and what he was playing and what was going on in his mental state than his own suite mates who were in contact with him.
Or the investigators who just combed through his room and didn't find a single game.
It's absolutely the worst kind of reprehensible ambulance chasing. And Thompson must really passionately despise video games so much that he's willing to exploit a terrible tragedy like this just to ride his own political hobby horse and once again try to draw video games into this despicable arena of tragedy. And
now
so
he kept saying in that interview that the only way that you could, you know, keep your heart rate down and something like this is, they said he was calmly walking from room to room, and the only way you could keep your heart rate down is you rehearsed it in a game, in a reality simulator, a hyper-reality simulator, I think they called it.
And of course, because as we all know, as Counter-Strike players, you all know that Counter-Strike is all about the calm, methodical, moving from room to room and gunning down the list. It's not about circle strafing and bunny hopping like a crazy f***er and running as fast as you can to stay alive.
Yeah. But and he went on.
The man is a clown.
He went on to blame Super Columbine Massacre RPG for training shooters, has he no concept of what that game is?
Well, he probably doesn't. But actually,
to be fair to Chris Matthews, he didn't give Jack Thompson an easy ride on that segment, and he did say, "Well, where's your evidence? I'm not seeing any evidence here. The only evidence I'm seeing is in direct contradiction to what you are saying." And Thompson just kept saying, how do you know he was playing this game? And Thompson would just kept saying, well, because in other school shootings, yeah, but what about this school shooting? You've got no evidence. And Thompson was forced to be, towards the end of that interview, very much on the defensive, because, you know, Chris Matthews, you know, there's, you know, you can say what you like about him, but, you know, I think he's a pretty sharp guy, and he's not going to let this kind of nonsense go out on his air unchallenged. And he saw it for the uncorroborated nonsense that it was, and he challenged him on it. So I say fair play to Chris Matthews.
One thing I was kind of disappointed that Chris Matthews didn't go after him for was when he was saying, well, you know, I've prosecuted a bunch of these cases where there are video games involved. Chris Matthews didn't point out
that he's lost all of them.
Yeah, he has lost every single one of these court cases where he's gone after games. Every single one.
The problem is, I mean, it would be easy, armed with all the facts, to say, well, so what's this about you trying to there'd been efforts to get you disbarred, and this situation now in Louisiana where taxpayers are going to have to pay back a huge amount of money due to a frivolous and pointless lawsuit that you instigated. I mean,
he co-authored that bill.
Yeah, it would be easy to steam into him, but obviously, you know, if you have a news show, it's probably not the best idea to completely undermine your own guest that you booked. I mean, what's the point of having someone on your show to then tell them they're spewing complete nonsense? So I think Chris Matthews kind of stayed within his bounds of not trying to completely destroy the guy, but at the same time, I think towards the end of the interview, he quite comprehensively, let viewers see that this guy was talking nonsense without any facts or any evidence to really back up what he was saying. All he has is vague and anecdotal stuff from other shootings, which as we now see as the clearer picture emerges of what was going on inside this kid's f***ed up head. That video games had nothing to do with it.
It seems like Jack Thompson went all in hoping for some video games to be associated with Cho in this case.
And lost.
And they just haven't. Yeah, he's lost, and hopefully this is it. This is the last we'll see of him, I hope.
But, you know,
I love the whole other notion that he said, that Jack Thompson said 80% of kids on college campuses are involved in playing these kinds of games. Well, okay. That presumably involves a lot of girls, which I've never seen in Counter-Strike as well. But, you know, even if that's true, even if you accept that number, doesn't that just undermine his own argument?
Totally,
if 80% of kids on college campuses are playing these games and they're so dangerous, wouldn't, I mean, college campuses would be like war zones.
You know,
also,
you,
also it, like going back to the thing where if you have to be, you have to train to do these things to keep your heart rate low and do this calmly. Isn't that like the very definition of being a sociopath, where you have no empathy towards other humans and you can do that without getting excited or just, you know, think it's just a casual thing to do? Isn't that like the definition of that mental illness?
Yeah, because I think if a regular person kills somebody, they freak out. If you're a psychopath, then it doesn't have the same kind of, you know, physiological reaction on you.
In which case, games have nothing to do with it.
Well, here's some good news. Here's some good news. In a surprise twist, somebody that you never thought would come to, you know, basically sanity's defense, and hopefully this is a sign that Jack Thompson's days in the media are numbered, Rush Limbaugh actually came out. Kotaku is reporting, in a recent episode of his show, a caller, postulated, well, here, I'll just read what he said. I'll read what the caller said and then Rush's response, and it's so refreshing to hear this. The caller says, "What I really think is an issue of video violence, video gaming. I will guarantee you, I'll bet my last dollar in my pocket, this shooter will be found to have been a compulsive video gamer. And when people are living that kind of lifestyle, and college students do this a lot, you know, somebody just sort of rambling and angry and looking for somebody to blame this on." So Rush's response was, first audible sigh, "Let's say you're right. Not every video gamer goes out and murders 33 people on the college on the college campus, though. There's more to this than that. We can find all kinds of societal problems and ills, but the fact of the matter is, whatever you would look at as a bad influence, video games, as you mentioned, it may desensitize people, but it doesn't turn everybody into mass murderers. I know it's natural that everybody wants to throw their theories into this and perhaps come up with perhaps a unique explanation or to understand, and I think it's natural because people have a tough time accepting a relatively simple explanation for something of this scale, but how many people are playing video games out there? How many millions of people are playing video games, and how many millions of people have guns? If you start to blaming the video games, you may as well demand video game control, because it's the same thing when you start trying to blame guns for this. You have here a sick individual, an evil individual who committed a random act. But if you want to start blaming the video games, this guy was this or that, well, then you got to maybe think about banning them, because that's the same tack that's taken with guns. You got one guy who used a gun, that's it. You're falling prey to the same way the drive-bys propagandize, and that's it."
And it's kind of frightening when Rush Limbaugh is the guy that's
the
talking.
Voice of reason.
Yeah, he's not preaching some radical agenda like he usually does. You know, he's actually talking common sense. And
it's a grim day for video games, though, isn't it? When we're quoting Rush Limbaugh in our defense, he's the guy who's got our backs now.
It's been the liberals that we've had issue with from the start, though.
Oh yeah. I mean, Hillary Clinton got up there next to Jack Thompson and was proposing these bills. And speaking of those bills, this one in Louisiana, where they got shot down, and a judge just ruled that they have to pay $92,000 in taxpayer money to repay the ESA's legal bills. And the judge just had this really scathing commentary on this bill, saying, "The court wonders why nobody objected to the enactment of this statute. In this court's view, the taxpayers deserve more from their elected officials, because they should have known, and they probably did know, that this would never fly, and that it would waste taxpayer time and taxpayer money, and, you know, tie up the courts, tie up the legislature. And they did it anyway, so that they can, so even when it gets shot down, they can say in their next campaign, 'I voted to keep
your kids safe
out of the hands of your kids.'"
And you know what? The same sponsor of that bill is thinking about trying it again. He hasn't learned.
Yeah.
He's saying that he might try again with a similar bill. The point being, like, you know, well, why wouldn't he? Because when you think about $92,000 in taxpayer money spread across the entire, you know, an entire area, it's going to be relatively small. The taxpayers don't realize that. They just think, oh, this guy is saving my children's life. Child's life.
As a taxpayer who just paid taxes, like just, you know, last week I filed my taxes, even more offensive to me that these politicians are doing this.
I just wanted to touch very briefly on something that was painful that happened to me last night. And I'm not bashing on 360. We get a lot of responses sometimes when we're critical of consoles here on the PC Gamer podcast. you know, I have a 360. I really like my 360. I play an awful lot of Guitar Hero 2. In fact, my tale of woe involves Guitar Hero 2. Here's what it is. Last night, I had a friend who wanted me to come over with a memory card with my profile so that we could play some co-op Guitar Hero 2 on his system and I could get those achievement points. So I thought, great idea. I had never tried copying my gamer tag before.
Okay, Greg, real quick, was there going to be any toenail painting or hair curling in this?
I was going to get to that later. You're ruining my story. Shut up. So long before the hair curling or the toenail painting, I was wondering how I was going to get my gamertag profile onto my memory card. I figured it wouldn't be difficult. How hard could it be? It's a console. So, well, I put the memory card into the system. I did what I thought was a copy of my gamertag onto the memory card and then removed the memory card. And then as soon as I did that, the Xbox, you know, fired up an alert and said, please immediately return the memory card to the system, which I did. And I checked the contents of the card, and my profile had been corrupted. Well, no worries. I knew my profile was still on my system, so I checked my hard drives so I could try it again. And whoopsie, my gamer tag wasn't on the hard drive either. It turns out you cannot copy your gamer tags. You can only move them, I guess for security reasons.
Why? So if you have your identity on a card and you go to play your Xbox, you're not there.
Yeah, you're not. You have to have it. The reason it's on the card is so you can't have multiple identities. So if you have a gold account, you can only have that gold account on one 360 at one time.
At one time. You can keep, because it's not at all clear, so I just want to explain it a little bit in more detail, but you can keep your gamer tag permanently on a memory card so that you can take it to friends' houses all the time. It's just that, yeah, it's not on your hard drive and that memory card at the same time.
That just seems ridiculous to me. Why can't I go over to a friend's house and just log in?
Like an instant messenger or something, yeah.
Yeah,
yes.
Why is there like Steam? You know, I even with EA's download link program, I can just go over to I've got one here at work and I've got one at home.
Right.
And I just log in with that. I don't have to carry a USB dongle back and forth.
Well, I guess because you can play under your gamer tag without being online, and they don't want you to advance on two systems simultaneously.
Exactly.
Okay.
But there should still be some way around it. There should also be just clearer language. I mean, in retrospect, it did say transfer. It didn't say copy when I was going to move this thing over. So it was really my bad. But it shouldn't be that easy. And it shouldn't also be that easy to corrupt a memory card. You know, like, I mean, I just, like, that's it, and then...
You just have a terrible touch.
I have a terrible touch when it comes to consoles. Luckily, it turns out, obviously, Microsoft stores your gamertag info on its servers. I had to spend an hour on the phone with Microsoft finding the email address I used and the password I had used. I finally did get everything back. But that experience, in conjunction with a recent experience at another friend's house where we were trying to get four controllers working simultaneously on a Wii... and actually just get in to play tennis, which took like 10 or 15 minutes, has led me to believe that these console systems, fellas, they're not as simple as people say.
Greg, when you were talking to Microsoft, did you ever at one point use the phrase, do you know who I am?
At one point, no. I at 5, 6, 7 different points, I brought that up, actually.
I think you're right, Greg. I think, you know, if you want to have a fun experience, you know, you should switch over to a system that requires the minimum of technical futzing around with, like a PC, maybe.
Hey, all I'm saying is that there is far more futzing to do on today's consoles than ever before, and it's not nearly as simple as it used to be. And meanwhile, the PCs are getting more simple to use.
Is this going to be the case with PCs once they unveil Live Anywhere and all that gamertag stuff?
Well, that's the hope. I mean, at the start, there's still going to be, and well, we can actually speak to that point. There's going to be some growing pains. But the long-term goal is that, yes, I mean, that the system gets much more simple to operate. We've actually got in-house a reviewable copy of Halo 2 that Norm is playing right now, and it's got on it Games for Windows Live. So just today, we've got our first experience with that, and it's kind of interesting. Norm, you were going to talk about it.
Well, the experience is a lot like playing with Live on 360. You have to have the Live program, and occasionally there are updates. So we had a little bit of problems updating the Games for Windows Live, just the front end.
But it hasn't actually gone live yet. So
maybe that was until the server's
Halo 2,
aren't up.
until Halo 2 actually hits shelves, we can't really judge that.
But you know, jumping into Halo 2, you can use a 360 controller, and once you press that,
hooray!
once you press the button, the middle button, the I guess what's it called,
the X
360
button,
yeah, the X button. Yeah, the guide button, you know, you jump into this little guide that's, it looks, you know, a lot like the 360 guide, that pops
up. It's a single blade though, right?
Right. It's not like the five blades you get with the 360, front end where there are like downloads and media. It's just, you have your friends list, who's online, and it was kind of weird because I was playing through Halo 2, and I got a notification that, you know, someone from my buddy list had popped up online and he was playing Guitar Hero. So that's something I didn't expect to see. And if I was, you know, if they were playing Halo 2, which eventually people will be playing Halo 2, you know, buddies will pop up, then you can invite them to games or start a co-op game or something.
Well, you can't do it if they're playing Halo 2 on their Xbox, though. Halo 2 only supports PC to
that's
PC.
Right. That's right. But when Shadowrun comes out, you'll be able to do that.
Well, can you chat? Can you chat across console to PC?
You can. You can chat, and I think there's a new update, the spring update for 360. When that comes out, have integrated MSN Messenger support, so you can have voice chat and text chat with all your MSN buddies.
Have you earned any? Have you scored any achievement points yet?
Not yet. I'm waiting. I know they intentionally made the game easy to score achievements because they know that, you know, that will be a big selling point for people. So once I get through like the first two missions, I'll have, you know, 60 achievement points. Where in a game like Guitar Hero 2, you have to buy all the characters for, you know, just 10 achievement points.
But you know, I played Halo 2. I'm actually doing the review. I played the first 45 minutes of it last night. I got home at like 11 o'clock. Started playing it, and you know, I gotta say, if they're gonna need all the selling points they can get on that game, because my God, they are charging $50, a full $50 for this. It is a 2.5-year-old game that was developed for a platform that was nearing the end of its life. So they were already straining to, you know, they were already wanted to do more than they could on that platform. This is like a direct port. I guess they used the cinematic models instead of like from all the cinematics in the game, or they had higher detail models. They used those as the in-game models, but it still looks like pre-Quake 3 stuff.
Wow.
You know, it's not a visually impressive game at all. And like the menus are still a little bit clunky, and you know, like I guess Norm finally figured out how to customize the controls, but we still couldn't figure out how to like bind grenade to the thumb button on the mouse. Like it doesn't seem to recognize the mouse thumb button at all.
Could just be drivers.
It just seems really lazy of them. And
DJ is a PC snob. He'll hate anything
Halo 1. I liked Halo 1 a lot, even though it was late to come to the PC. I played it all the way through. I enjoyed it. This one, it just, I don't know. I am pretty annoyed at this situation, frankly.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I've just been watching over Norm's shoulder a bit, and I mean, I've played the Xbox version, and I think it's a fun game, but certainly the graphics are, man, they're hurting. There's something about, you know, when you're sitting at your TV and you're 10 or 15 feet back, you don't realize how low res the textures are. When you're sitting, a foot from your monitor, and you're playing at a super high resolution, it really, the game and the engine's age really start to become apparent. So, be interesting to see. I want to try the multiplayer. There's obviously a lot more gameplay there, so we're just jumping in. It's too early to say definitively how we feel about the game, but initial impressions could certainly be better.
But I mean, you know what really burns me about it though is that this is supposed to be an incentive to buy Vista. I mean, they're saying you can't play this on XP. Not that it requires it for any technology reason. It doesn't use DX10. Mm-hmm. But you need Vista to play it. It's like, you know, they're dangling this as a carrot to people to buy Vista.
Rotten carrot.
My guess is it will not be much of a carrot unless the online community really ends up embracing the multiplayer aspects of it.
But there are much better and newer multiplayer shooters out there.
I don't think they're doing themselves any favors here, because I certainly would not go through all the hell and the hassle that's involved in upgrading to Vista just to play this game.
No.
Like you said, based on the fact that it's not really even that exciting a prospect. It's a port. It's not probably not that great. And, you know, but we're available on XP. I'd probably be quite happy to play it, but there's going to be a lot of XP owners out there who, you know, they might otherwise have been able to sell this game to, who aren't going to be willing to upgrade to Vista to play it.
Yeah. It's symptomatic of a number of, I think, missteps Microsoft has taken lately, both on the Vista side and on the Xbox side. The Guitar Hero 2, download song packs just came out last week, I believe, and people are really unhappy about the price and the bundling. There's the fundamental issue, and we've discussed it a lot of times in the podcast before, is just that, you know, if Vista is really the number one gaming platform for Microsoft, like Bill Gates says, then where the hell are the games?
For me, it's like being told, oh, Vista is the next big thing for gaming. Now here's this game you can only play on Vista, and it's 2.5 years old.
Yeah.
Are there any other?
To be fair, if you want to continue the analogy, a lot of console platforms don't always launch, you know, with very strong lineups.
One launched without a single game, Gary.
No, you're right.
Not one.
And we've said it before. If you think of this like a gaming platform, the way I think they're trying to position it, it's the worst launch ever.
Yeah,
it is. But I mean, Shadowrun is going to launch, and that's not going to require Vista.
The big issue right now, and this is what I'm hearing from my friends that aren't in the industry, and this is why I listen to them, you know, I'm listening to them, and it troubles me, is just that, like, these are a bunch of guys that are PC gamers, and they feel no reason whatsoever to upgrade to Vista. I still have high hopes for Microsoft's initiatives. I still have high hopes for Vista, but man, right now, things are looking pretty bleak.
Well, no, it's not that they look bleak, it's that they don't look any better. I mean, things look really good for PC gaming with all the games I just listed that are coming out. You know, I just saw a trailer for the one from Sierra, the RTS, World in Conflict. Looks awesome. I really insanely high detail RTS. I mean, it's like as good as Company of Heroes looked a year ago. This looks, you know, a year better.
Yeah, but my point, Dan, is not that. My point is not that there aren't some great games coming this year. There absolutely are. It's going to be a banner year for PC gaming. What I'm saying is a lot of the industry's hopes and dreams have been pinned to Microsoft's Games for Windows initiative. And so if that falters, yes, there will be some tremendous games, but what sustains that going forward? What's the force, the market force that sustains it for years to come? And the answer is I don't know, but I was hoping it would be Games for Windows.
But Games for Windows is doing really well, isn't it? I love the Games for Windows games because they all support widescreen. They all seem to run really well in Windows, but they don't require Vista.
No. But I'm just saying, like, that is, Games for Windows and the Live and the Vista initiatives. A lot of this stuff was all you know around Vista, not necessarily on Vista. But you know,
I think when you see a decent number of games out there that support the live type features like achievements and unified friends lists and invites from your desktop and you know, in-game messaging and you know, the easy online play, all the stuff that we enjoy on Xbox 360, when that's a reality and not just the promise of a reality on PC, then I think we'll all be very excited about that. It's just taken a very long time to come together.
But are you just talking about, you're just wondering about the lack of shelf space that Microsoft has bought back, or?
No, well, it's a whole host of things, right? It's like, there's obviously still plenty of time, for Microsoft to change things, but the push that was started nearly 2 years ago, or that Microsoft said they were gonna, initiate nearly 2 years ago, hasn't really happened yet. Like, you know, there's been a number of stops and starts. It seems like Microsoft wasn't staffed enough to actually, you know, make the Games for Windows and the Vista initiatives happen earlier. They said they wanted to, and I believe that they did want to. I think they didn't actually have the manpower. They were bandwidth limited. They couldn't actually get this stuff done. So now they are. They're spending some marketing dollars. They're buying back shelf space at various retailers, and you know, every day there's another store that gets the Games for Windows shelf space and the treatment.
Do you think it's the competition that might be a problem in their attitude? Like on the Xbox side, on the console side, I mean, yeah, 360 is the market leader right now, but they're in a very heated pitch battle, you know, between PlayStation 3 and Wii, both of which have got, you know, a very strong argument. You know, a few years from now, any one of those three could be the winner, and all three companies have to battle it out for every scrap of market share that they can get. What's the competition for Vista? What's the competition for computer gaming for Microsoft? There is none.
No, well, the competition is basically their concern. A lot of people believe that the reason that they went heavy on the games angle is because they thought, you know, that Mac and Linux were going to take a bigger bite of their market share.
I'm just saying there isn't this, I don't think there's the same incentive for them to deliver the best product and stay ahead of their competitors, because they don't have competitors on the PC side the way they do on the console side.
Well, except that I think in the, you know, these days I think people generally consider gamers gamers. They're increasingly less console gamers and PC gamers. So Microsoft wants to get people playing games on PC and 360. If they can get, you know, compelling cross-platform play, that will bring a lot more people in. You know, the bigger they can make gaming on both platforms, I think they see it as a benefit for them.
I think that's a fascinating part of it as well. I'd love to see better numbers on that, because it feels like for every person like me or you, Greg, who is that kind of format agnostic, and, you know, I enjoy playing PC games as much as I enjoy playing Xbox games, and so do you. There's also someone like Dan who has pitched his tent on one side and wants nothing to do with the other formats.
And he's increasing.
I don't want anything to do with it. I don't have time for it. There's too much good stuff on the PC. I don't have time to play all that.
But yeah, I think Dan is in the increasingly in the minority, even just here around the office.
Don't oppress me.
You know, I think
let my people go. Okay, I'm done.
And scene. So yeah, I think in the years to come, we're just going to see. I think Microsoft is going to, they're going to be incentivized to rely heavily on cross-platform play, and to make the PC experience very compelling. And I think they'll do that. Like I've said numerous times, I just wish that they had gotten off to a speedier start. Yeah,
I'm just not excited about the piecemeal way in which they're rolling this out. When they launched the 360 Live system, you know, all the main, you know, they're always updating it, but all the main features worked on day one. The way they're doing this, I had hoped it would be the same. I would hope that on day one, from Vista, with the Vista games that would be available, I would have a little thing that would sit in my system tray or whatever, that would be my friends list. I could see people logging on and logging off into the Vista Live service. I could receive an invite from my Vista desktop, press a button, click on a thing, and, you know, have that game launch and, you know, be put straight into the game with that person who's invited me. Or that's the true Vista version of Xbox Live, and it's not there, and it seems like it's going to be a while before what I hoped would be basic features are all going to be incorporated.
It'll be there for real with the launch of Shadowrun, which is, by all indications, a tremendous game. So that's the good news. It's like, that's a big splash.
And by all indications, we mean we played it and it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
But wait, are you including in that, Greg, what I just said? Is that kind of desktop integration where you've got the friends list available, you know, not just from within the game, but, you know, I could be, you know, working on a Word document or whatever, but I've got a little gizmo and I can see my friends coming on and offline. I can get an invite or a message, press a button and go into the game and join them there.
From what I've been told, that's what I think it is. I have not actually seen it myself, so I can't say for sure.
Because I'm really missing the difference right now. Once you get spoiled on something like Xbox Live, like I joined a Command & Conquer 3 clan, and I've been trying to get online with my friends, and the only way to do it, to organize, you know, when you're all going to be in a game at the same time, is to do it through an external service like a website, like either EA's website or, you know, another board where, you know, people can get together and say, well, I'll be online at 7 o'clock. And that just feels like banging rocks together compared to the way you're able to do it on Xbox, where,
well, you know,
all,
you know,
the,
yes,
invites are seamlessly integrated.
I'm sure that with the launch of this new 360 upgrade that integrates MSN chat, that's probably exactly what it's going to do.
So far as what we've now been taught to expect as basic features, like that kind of in-game and out-of-game, you know, inviting and messaging and stuff like that, to go back to PC now and go back to the bad old ways of having to kind of do it all manually through, you know, calling someone up on the phone or instant messaging them or meeting them on a website and say, well, I'll see you in the lobby at 7 o'clock or whatever, that just feels so primitive to me now.
I get the feeling that Microsoft is going to reflect on the first year of Vista in the same way that Sony's going to reflect on the first year of the PS3, which is to say, you know, it didn't happen.
Yeah,
it's remarkable, isn't it? The parallels for all the legendary antics that transpired out of our Windows PC versus PlayStation 3 debacle. Mm-hmm. It's remarkable how similar the launch of Vista and the launch of the Sony PlayStation 3 seem quite similar now. You know, they're vastly overpriced, confusing SKUs, nobody's excited, nobody really wants it, there aren't any good games. It's quite shocking, really. Does any new PC that you buy now automatically have Vista on it? Because as a gamer, I probably would be happier to just keep XP on there for right now.
I read that Dell has recently, they recently re-added the option to have XP on your machine.
Really?
Because it was so in demand, people didn't want Vista yet.
Oh, God.
And, you know, Vista has bugs to be worked out yet. For the most part, I am enjoying using it. I like the way it looks. I like the way it handles a lot of media. I like a lot of things about it. But it just has some, SP1 will fix a lot of things, I imagine.
I don't remember there being this much aggravation surrounding the launch of XP. People being fairly happy about XP.
No, there was plenty of that. There were driver issues like crazy.
And speaking of driver issues, last night, the reason I stopped playing Halo was because I was using a beta driver, Vista driver for my 8800. And in the information they sent along with the review build, they said, well, you know, it has some issues with this. And sure enough, there were a bunch of flickering textures and stuff like that. Turned out NVIDIA had put out a new driver just yesterday. Hooray, you know, they hadn't put one out in a couple months. This is good news. So I went and installed that. And you know, when I went to download it, it had this really lengthy install process. It was like it has to completely uninstall the old driver, and you know, and with some configurations, apparently it has to restart your machine several times to do it. I was willing to do that. And I went through the first wipe process. It rebooted, blue screen.
An operating system I thought that couldn't blue screen.
Oh yeah, but... oh yeah, it can blue screen. Yeah.
Boy, can it blue screen. Let me tell you.
not all the time. But it took me probably an hour of tinkering to get everything back to where it should be.
So it is green. Long story short, the operating system is green. XP
and,
was also
and drivers
green.
Are green so.
And drivers are green. That'll change. Let's move on to something a little less doom and gloom. That being the fact that Valve has been hacked. And all of your credit card information is probably in the hands of hackers as we speak.
What do you mean, Steam has been hacked or Valve?
Steam has been hacked.
Wow.
I'm sorry,
well,
I said Valve.
Of Steam.
I said Valve has been hacked. Yes,
it's and
Steam
it's
has
not
been
confirmed.
Hacked. No, it's not confirmed. Let's see, who's reporting it? It is. Where's the story?
Let's call up Doug and see if and try to confirm.
He's
it.
Not. We've already tried.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not responding. So it's actually on Joystick. So according to Joystick, Valve's Steam content distribution system has apparently been hacked. The culprit allegedly got deep enough into the system to steal credit card information and financial information on Valve.
Oh,
Daily Tech reports the hacker known as Maddox broke in and obtained screenshots of internal Valve web pages, a portion of Valve's cafe directory, very important, error logs, but far more important than that, credit card information of customers, and financial information on Valve. Maddox posted the information he obtained on an anti-Steam website. Who knew there were such things? He's also threatened to release the spreadsheet of the credit card information. They've also tried contacting Valve, and they haven't gotten a response yet. Going to be a very, very busy day over there as they field questions about this. But I guess this really does... You know, for all that we've debated back and forth since digital distribution really started up, there's never been a case like this. This has always been the concern, right?
Well, it's been one of the concerns. The other concern being that the service might shut down, a la Triton.
Sure.
But
this is sort of a worse. If true,
this is the security concern.
Yeah, this is a.
But on the other hand, you know, this happens to financial institutions, so. You know, it's not like there's anything you can really do about it. I mean,
it doesn't mean it's forgivable. When it happens to financial institutions, it's what I've been reading in the last several years. It's like, you know, some exec leaves a laptop out somewhere and it gets stolen and it's got a lot of credit card information. It seems increasingly rare that people are actually hacking in to say Bank of America to get your credit card info.
But this isn't a bank. This is more like an e-tailer situation.
Right.
No, but you're giving, but when was the last time, I don't know, eBay or whatever.
Amazon,
buy it now. Right. Anything. I mean, yeah, Amazon. When's the last time those places got hacked and your credit card information got out? You should have the reasonable expectation that your credit card information is secure with these people.
Definitely.
Can I just ask? Because I really don't like hackers. So I've got to ask. First of all, what was the point of this? Because it seems like, you know, this, they weren't trying to be helpful from a security point. If they were trying to expose security hole, they could have contacted Valve privately without, you know, pushing this stuff out all over the web. So it seems like it was malicious in intent. And isn't this criminal?
It is.
Oh, certainly criminal. It's certainly criminal. But that's why he is the hacker known as Maddox.
On the other hand, he doesn't seem to have the intent to, like, use this.
No. He said he might post it on a website, on a public website.
Well, he puts instructions on how to get through the system.
No. He posted information he obtained. He also threatened to release a spreadsheet of the credit card information, which means your information would be in the hands of your fellow man.
However, that information would also be in the that would be in the hands of, you know, everybody. So I could immediately, like the financial institutions would immediately go to that, look at those numbers, and suspend them. So as long as he's not, you know, trying to use it himself.
That's assuming you're in front of a computer 24/7 and see your credit card number, or the credit card institutions all go there and do that. In the meantime, a lot of fraud is possible.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm not saying it's legal or admirable in any way, shape, or form. I'm saying it could be worse.
And we should also point out that this is also still an unconfirmed rumor as we're saying all this. But
speaking of unconfirmed rumors, if we want to move on to the stalker situation where last week we were covering the scandal that was brewing where people had modders had gone in and found art assets that apparently came from Doom 3 and Half-Life 2. Turns out that those came from a third-party texture pack that sells their artwork to game developers. Yeah. So it was the same art, but it wasn't
stolen.
Yeah, it wasn't stolen.
Right. And the smoking gun, the texture file that had the word imp in it, which people thought was the imp character from Doom 3, actually was an acronym for I don't know what it was. It was some IMP thing.
Right. Why couldn't this have been cleared up 10 minutes after it hit the net?
Well, from what I heard from THQ is that all the guys from GSC Game World were either on vacation or at a conference at the time, so they couldn't reach them in time. So.
And also, I imagine, obviously the Valve guys were around and they were looking into it, but I mean, you've got however many thousands or millions of textures. It's not like, oh, I recognize that one. Yeah. We bought that out of this pack. We didn't come up with that on our own.
I don't know. Those texture guys are pretty nerdy. you mean the id guys, right?
It was Valve. It was Valve and id. Wasn't it Half-Life and Quake?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah. That they were saying could have.
How's that typing going, guys?
Sorry, I had to respond to that. Very important. I've got the president of show business on the other line.
The mayor of the town.
Hey PC Gamer, this is Tom in San Diego. I just recently started listening to the podcast and I wanted to ask you about PC games and Major League Baseball. Right now, since the Major League Baseball season recently started, there are new MLB games for the PC this year. Will the MLB ever come back to the PC in the near future? I'd rather play an MLB game with a terrible team rather than a college baseball team with a ping of metal bats, or some game with a fake baseball league full of generic faces and names. Thanks and go Padres!
This is a time when we desperately need Kristen on the podcast, our resident baseball
boo,
expert.
Boo, Padres, boo.
I can tell you, I don't know if Greg, you were here long enough to remember this, but some of the most fun I ever had on PC gaming was when me and Q had our baseball World Series using whatever EA's game was that year. I think it would have been 97 or 98. All-Star Baseball, whatever they called it, but we had like a kind of a drinking version of it where every time, you know, every base hit or every out, or virtually anytime anything happened, it involved you having to drink. Oh, that
like
pixel move.
So really the game itself was almost incidental.
Well, no, it was one of those games where, you know, it was really dumbed down, so it was almost kind of like everything was a home run or a base. I mean, it's all, you know, massive hits. It was kind of like a Rocky fight, you know, but it bore no relation to the actual sport. It was just everything was a massive pile driver out of the ballpark. And so, you know, the game, but the games would all go down to, you know, extra innings. It was always very exciting. But yeah, why aren't there any of these? Where are these games?
Here's
now?
The problem. Before there used to be three big baseball games, right? There was High Heat Baseball, which I think was published by
3DO.
That's right. And then there was the 2K series, which was published by 2K Games. And then their EA had their own, which was
Major League Baseball.
Right.
I think.
But like EA likes to do, or EA actually bought out the rights to all the football games, and I think some other company bought the rights to MLB. So you really there was only going to be one player, and now they're only developing for consoles. So we're not.
That is a sad consequence of what we're seeing on the sports side now. Is these kind of large companies like 2K and in particular EA signing these exclusive deals with the leagues. So that, you know, there's much less choice. You know, usually, if you want to play an official NFL football game, you've got to go to EA.
Think it's even with the league. It's with the Players Association. That's what it is.
No, it's with the league.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's with...
Because Barry Bonds wasn't part of the Players Association, so even though some game had the official league contract, there couldn't be Barry Bonds.
There's always weird things like that with players like Barry Bonds and Michael Jordan who, you know, are kind of above the game in terms of their own celebrity. So you get those weird situations. But yeah, it's just a bad thing for consumer choice in general because obviously there's fewer games to choose from. And I think that it makes the publishers lazy. You know, it gets to what we were talking about earlier with Vista. There's less of an incentive for a company like EA to make the best baseball game when they're the only game in town. It is sad.
There's also the fact that I years and years ago, before I was a PC gamer, I did PR briefly for 3DO, and so I had friends there that continued to work on the High Heat series. And even though that was considered the best baseball game series that had come along in years, my recollection is that it sold poorly. There just isn't a big enough fan base on the PC. To warrant, I think, even potentially even a single, you know, major label, major publisher baseball game.
And you know why I think that is? Because, and this is one of the few times you'll hear me say this, sports games are better played on a gamepad.
Well, right, but here I am with my Xbox 360 wireless gaming receiver for Windows. I'm all set to play on PC with my gamepad. But where's the game?
Hopefully there will be a renaissance. Was it Tom or was it Tim?
Tom.
Tom. what you're seeing increasingly are sports sims on the PC, some of which are very good. And one of them that we've got reviewed coming up in our July issue is Out of the Park Baseball 2007, which our reviewer really liked. You can read the entire review. In the July
not only
issue.
That one, but baseball mogul Dan Morris has loved that for years.
That's not an actual baseball playing game. That's
No. But I'm just saying that.
But if you're a fan of the sport, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, there's also Ultimate Baseball Online if you're into that kind of thing. It's kind of an MMO baseball game.
But if you want to play action sports games, I think at the end of the day, just get a console and play those games because they are much better on a gamepad and also. You know, if you've got, you know, when you watch sports, you sit around the couch with your buddies, you know, on the big screen TV, and that's closer to the console experience than what you get on the PC experience. Apart from, you know, oddities like Norm who have their PC hooked up to their big screen TV at home as well. But for the most part, the PC world, I don't think the sports action, scene is gonna get much better anytime soon. If you want to play sports games, I think you have to bite the bullet and get an Xbox or a PlayStation.
You know what I used to like to do when I had High Heat Baseball? I'd just set it on the CPU versus CPU mode and put it on my TV and just watch it as if it was a real baseball game.
Well, my brother used to do that all the time. He's a big baseball fan.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Greetings from Down Under, PC Gamer. My name's Heath and I'm based in Sydney. My question is regarding the 8600 NVIDIA video cards that are due to be released soon. And whether there's any new information on these, what sort of prices are they going to be, what versions are going to be available, will they run DX9 games considerably faster than existing cards, that sort of thing. That's about it. Thank you very much.
Well, the information I've seen on them so far is they'll be between $200 and $300, and they are using 88, you know, the 8 series hardware, so they are also much faster than the 7 series of cards in DX9 and DX10, and they do support DX10. So
can't you buy them now?
I've just seen the benchmarks. I don't know if they're actually in stores yet, but they will be shortly.
They'll be shortly, and I think we've got one or two here in the office. But
yes, we do.
We do not have our tests in front of us, so we cannot say definitively how it ranks at this time. But obviously, look for reviews in the magazine in the very near future.
Hi, everybody at the PC Gamer staff. First, I would like to start off by saying I hate you all for talking about Peggle. I've been playing that for the past 2 years.
I knew as soon as you said I hate you all, you were going to say Peggle.
Addicting. Also, I'd like to ask, why doesn't Microsoft just sell, like, a $50 version of DirectX 10 that you can install on XP? That would make a lot of people who wouldn't buy Vista just for DirectX 10 buy DirectX 10 for XP. I know that I'm not going to buy Vista because I don't want to spend $200 on a new OS, and I like XP. But if they put out a patch or something for under $100 where you can install DirectX 10 on XP, I would buy that. What are your thoughts on this? And great podcast.
First of all,
I think a lot more people are going to be hating you in the next couple of weeks, because I just got my latest issue of PC Gamer in the mail today, and if I'm not mistaken, Peggle is on the disc.
Peggle's on the disc. Against my better judgment, I might add, that game sucks. I hate it. I don't like it. It's not fun. It's pachinko without the money. There's no. It's.
Are you being serious? You actually don't like it?
Let me rephrase. Let me amplify my position. I think it's an okay game. I played it for about a half hour because every single person here in the office was just loving it.
Hey, not every single person. I wasn't playing it either.
Every single person I care about was loving it. And
I would generally find that if everyone but Dan is playing a game, that's more likelihood that I would enjoy it. Yeah.
So, my thoughts exactly. So I dove in and I just thought, yeah, it's pachinko and
money.
It doesn't grab me. So that said, I bowed to peer pressure. We put it on the disc. So there it is.
Now
I'm going to get a lot of hate mail.
Is it the full game or the trial version?
It's the trial version.
I thought that was a smart thing you did with the disc this month, actually, doing all the casual games.
It's an interesting experiment. I hope the readers will like it. There are a lot of games on there that we certainly all enjoy as editors. We've got, so people who don't know it, we've got basically 22 of what we're calling the year's best games are actually the 22 hand-picked casual games that the editors of PC Gamer enjoy playing the most. And so we just each came up with 4 or 5 games.
Crimson Land for the win.
Yes. And put them on the disc. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun for people that are getting the disc issue.
But in response to the DirectX 10 question, Microsoft is hell bent on getting everybody to Vista. That's their end goal, and they will stop at nothing to achieve it. So, and you know, DX10 is really the sole gaming benefit of Vista. And if they just want to attract gamers to Vista, that's the only thing they've got to offer. So, I wouldn't expect to see that like a standalone DX10 upgrade you can buy in the near future, if ever.
Cool. And I did see, I just went to Newegg, they're selling the 8600 cards all over the place. Under $200 in some cases.
Under 200, wow.
Yep.
What are you playing, Jeremy?
Peggle is my therapy, man. I'm sorry you don't like
God.
It, but it's seriously. I mean, I can be, my mind can be going crazy over something that I really just shouldn't be spending that much time on, and I'll play Peggle for 20 minutes, and it will take effort to remember what it was I was thinking about. It's fantastic. I love it.
So what you're saying is it's a brainwasher.
It's great. I love it. You know, give it to me. I mean, it's like, what? The game costs, I don't know, 20, 30 bucks.
$20.
You compare that to the price of a therapist? Give me Peggle.
Gaz?
I'm actually kind of over Peggle now. I hit kind of, usually what will happen when I play a game is I'll hit a wall where it just becomes too difficult, and I hit that level in Peggle where there's just one challenge level I just can't get past, and I'm over it now. So I haven't played it in a little while. But as I said earlier, I did join a Command & Conquer 3 clan, and we've been doing some practicing and playing some 2v2 games online.
Are you any
and
good
having
yet?
Fun. What's that?
Are you any good yet?
I've got some of my, my skills have been coming back. I've been promoted a few times. I think my win-loss ratio is I've definitely got a lot more wins than I've got losses. So right. I think I've been lucky with opponents, but I've been doing okay. I do much better in the team games when it's just one-on-one where it's all on me. I really feel the pressure in those games. But when, you can kind of back each other up and, you know, especially if you've got another strong player on your side, that can really help. So I've been, those are the kind of games that I prefer to play. I like the 2v2, 3v3. So that's been a lot of fun.
So, why don't you mention what happened when you and I played last week?
You beat me easily.
Guys, we gotta set it up. Me and DJ versus you and your best teammate.
I don't really know who my best teammate. I still prefer the idea of just me and you versus DJ.
Okay.
You guys, I'm dead serious. I would love to see one of these commentated matches with Norm.
Well, we'll do it.
We need a commentary. We need a commentator. Who wants to do that?
Greg?
Well, you can commentate it afterwards. The players can commentate the match after, you know, and talk about their strategy.
That would be fantastic. And I know the listeners would
we'll
love
do that.
It too. All right.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, that sounds fun. It's like a podcast, an in-game podcast.
I know we promised to do that last week, but Gaz failed so miserably that this wouldn't have been fun.
The other thing I should mention is that in a fairly significant event in my Warcraft career, I parted ways with my guild.
Oh.
How did your longtime best friend Christian the Swede Svensson, former editor in chief of Next Gen Online, take the news?
Well, he actually stepped down before I did, so it's
so you were following
the leader. Drama, guild drama. No, it's
what happened.
No, what happened was that Sven, who was the founder of this guild, and in fact was the founder of the progenitor guild all the way back in EverQuest, so you know his relationship with that guild goes back a very long way. Basically just got to a point where he wasn't able to, you know, this is a very serious endgame raiding guild, and, you know, you're expected to play a lot. And part of the reason why I eventually left was because I felt like I was kind of more, it's more like being an employee in a corporation when you're playing in a guild that takes it as serious, you know, you're expected to, you know, you have performance reviews and, well, you have to do this and you can get disciplined by officers. It's like, that's not fun when you take it that seriously.
Now, Gaz, did you get sexually harassed?
No, there was no sexual harassment, fortunately. I'm willing to accept that if it comes from a female avatar. I just kind of block out who's probably on the other end of the connection and try to enjoy myself. But no, there was none of that. But no, so he basically kind of stepped down as guildmaster and hasn't been playing that much. And another player who's a real life friend of mine stepped down, and so I just wasn't feeling it anymore. I couldn't keep up with the very high requirements and standards of conduct in the guild. Like I said, I really did feel like it's when you take the game that seriously, it's more like work than play. And so I was removed from their rosters officially. but I don't want to quit the game entirely. I want to try and find, if I can, this kind of happy medium where you can still raid end game and kind of be close to kind of towards the, you know, the high end of the game, but without, you know, all that stress. So I'm on the lookout right now for a new guild on my server. So if there's anyone on the Kil'jaeden server who's looking for a level 70 mage with decent gear, you should get in touch with me and let me know.
Well, first of all, when you left the guild, did they have like everybody line up and just one by one turn their back on you?
No, it was really a remarkable kind of non-event. What had happened was I had kind of made the decision that I didn't. You know, usually what happens on guild boards when long-standing players leave is they leave a note. You know, they make a very emo post on the board going, I can't do it anymore, I can't play, my girlfriend's left me, and this game, I gotta go back to college, and bleh. And then there's all these kind of emotional shout-outs of threads that go on for days.
No.
And I just thought, I really can't be bothered with any of that. So what, I really just kind of stopped playing. I basically kind of didn't log in for about 30 days, and it was only that I could, you know what, I'm not even playing this anymore, what am I even doing? And so I had logged in to de-guild myself and actually found that I'd already been removed from the roster for lack of playtime. So I was like, okay, well that saves me the trouble. And my access to the website had been, you know, to the guild board had been removed. I was like, screw it, I'm not even going to bother. So I just kind of quietly left. And, so there was no drama or it was not a significant event. But yeah, I'm a free agent now. And so
you couldn't quit because you'd been fired.
Yeah, that's what it was. They fired me before I could.
And quit. Then as soon as you realized you'd been let go, you desperately wanted back in.
No, it was honestly my sense was one of relief of not having to go through
right. The
motions of explaining why I was leaving.
Gaz is one of those people that, in order to break up with a girlfriend, he just doesn't call her.
I did actually have a situation about 15 years ago when I was working for a games magazine where I hated everyone else on that project. So I was working from home as kind of a remote correspondent, and I hated them so much that I resigned, and I wrote a very terse letter of resignation, and I was trying to send it to them via fax, but it wouldn't go through because their fax line was busy. And then I found out about 5 minutes later the reason why their fax line was busy because they were sending me a fax firing me. So this actually is this actually brought back some weird memories of that. But no, it's funny, guy. The column that I just turned in for the next issue mentioned this, and it talked about how at the time that it had happened, I kind of felt, at the time that I wrote it, and you'll see this in the column, that I was all like, I'm done with Warcraft. I finally, you know, I've broken up with the game, and, you know, I quit the guild, and I'm not going to play anymore. The only thing that remains is for me to, go onto the website and unsubscribe, you know, because I'm paying $15 a month that I don't need to be spending. But that's kind of like burning all your old pictures of your ex-girlfriend. So like, that's kind of the last phase. You have to go through all the different grieving stages before you can finally do that. So I still haven't unsubscribed my account, and I've now kind of gone back from thinking that I'm done with the game to realizing that I'm just done with playing it with such a group of serious hardcore people that I'm not enjoying it. And if I can find a guild that, you know, you can still go and hit the top dungeons and get good gear and play to a high standard, but without, you know, some of these crazy requirements where you do really feel like you're a cog in a machine, and the officers are very strict, and you really feel like an employee more than part of this game. It's, you know, if that is possible to find, then great. But if I don't find a guild like that, then I'm not a casual player. I do like to play to a serious level, just not to this uber serious level. So I don't know. Who knows? A month from now, I'll either be in a new guild that I'll be very happy with, or I will just have quit.
I think that was our first classified ever on the podcast.
Seriously, I thought it sounds like he was interviewing for a job.
What value can you bring to this guild, guys?
Yeah, well, I like to think, you know, I'm very conscientious. And do you have anything you'd like to ask me?
What do you think? What do you think your weaknesses are?
He has a weakness to magic and fire. But he's very resistant to frost.
That's right. I'm
that's my next job interview, which is not coming up anytime soon. But
I'm sure a lot of players do feel that way, though. I know that other players in this guild have left for the same reason. And there's the casual guilds, usually the ones that have the really silly names, and then there's the ones that are kind of that are rating high end, but they're not the uber elite ones. And then there's the uber elite guilds that, like I said, you know, you're required to put in, you know, a minimum of 20 hours playtime. And I mean, that's per week, but when I first started playing the game, I could do 20 hours in a couple of days. I mean, it was insane. But now that has initially worn off, you're at 20 hours a week. I basically realize, you know, when you start to think about how long you've played and you think about what you could, I mean, so I write screenplays for a living, and I know how long it takes me to write one if I sit down and put my mind to it. And when I look at my / played time, I realize I basically could have written 3 scripts in the time that I've devoted to playing this game. And so what an incredible waste of productivity that is. You know, you can, your achievements in the game are so ethereal. You know,
The question is, how much could you have drank in that time?
Drinking time and Warcraft time are not mutually exclusive.
I always thought there was a third party industry opportunity in somehow bringing your World of Warcraft character into the real world for people who do quit. You know, whether it's like taking a screenshot of you standing somewhere and printing it out on a huge frame poster or something like that, but some kind of trinket, something you could bring with you from the game.
A lot of people do, of course, is they sell their character and at least make some money. I mean, my character, if the current rates are anything to go by, I could probably sell this character for $500 or $600. But then, if you if you break that down by
hours
by how many hours I put into it, I may as well go, you know, make shoes for Nike in Malaysia or something.
So Norm, what have you been playing?
I'd like to point out
I gotta go real soon. I've been playing Infernal, which I'm liking, and also a whole lot of Guitar Hero 2. If anyone else has Guitar Hero 2 on 360, try Surrender. It's the very first song on hard mode, and if you can get over 268,000 points, let me know.
All right. Norm, you've actually come around on Infernal?
It's getting better. It's my therapy. It's a lot of mindless clicking, and it looks pretty.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, and the game I've been playing, actually this is not the game I've been playing most of all, but just to counteract all the Peggle love, everyone go out there and play Tasty Planet. Tasty Planet, it's glorious.
What's Tasty Planet?
You can eat cars. That's all I'm saying. That was enough to get Dan hooked for at least an hour.
Yeah, I played the trial. And I'm like, do I want to buy this? I really shouldn't. I'll get too hooked.
Tasty Planet.
Dingo Games.
Dingo Games?
That's who apparently made it, right?
Maybe. I didn't look at the developer.
But, it's on the disc also this month, so you can check that out.
I have been playing, well, actually my WoW account expired last night. I make sure to keep it, on, you know, not to rebill me. So every time it expires, I get to think, do I want to devote my next month, the next month of my playtime to this? And so I might take a little break, cause I'm up to level 45. But this progress is starting to slow down. I like the leveling up. I don't like long gaps between the leveling.
The final slog from 60 to 70 is just agony.
Yeah, I quit halfway to 70.
Yeah, I don't know if I could handle that. I was enjoying the part where I could do like a level per night and then go do something else. You know, it's like I had that landmark where I could stop, and you know, it's like a good quitting point. Now it's getting to the point where it takes me like 3 or 4 nights to level up, and that's a bit much. So. I've also been playing some CNC3, which, and the problem with the CNC games has always been, and this game is a real throwback to the old ones, and so it's kind of carried over some of the problems in that I've been getting rushed, like, with massive numbers of Scorpion tanks or whatever, and there's just no stopping it, because they can crank those things, like, somebody who has figured out how to min-max the economy and how to get every second out of their harvesters and their vehicle production facilities, they can crank out these vehicles like really fast, but essentially at that point they're playing a math problem and not a game, you know. There's just a one way to do it at the maximum possible speed, and they're throwing wave after wave of these tanks at you, and there's really no way to defend it unless you're doing the same exact thing.
You think it's going to need a patch?
Yeah, I mean, they might need some better base defenses to be able to stop a rush like that. At the same time, if you increase the base defenses, you run into a whole problem of, you know, people that aren't rushing. You know, there are legitimate attacks that go on. Where people are actually playing. But if you amp up the base defenses to be able to stop a rush attack, they're going to make mincemeat of any, you know, non-rush attack too. So. It's a very delicate balance, and balancing an RTS has got to be the hardest job in gaming, I think. Except maybe for writing a complex RPG story.
Writing a column about RTS games. That's very complex.
Yes, I'm sure that will be.
Alright guys, I think that's all the time we've got. But thanks for joining us. Remember to send your questions, be they written or audio, to us at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Also, make sure if you want to subscribe to the magazine that you go to pcgamer.com/subscribe. And lastly but not leastly, our annual 500-man LAN showdown is coming back to San Jose, June 15th through the 17th at the San Jose Convention Center. For details, head to showdownlan.com. All right, thanks, guys. On behalf of Norm, Gary, Dan, and Jeremy Williams, I am Greg Viederman. We'll see you next week. Welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 79. This is for the week of April 16th, 2007. I am your lovely host, Greg Viederman, editor-in-chief of PC Gamer Magazine.
Good to have you back, Greg.
Thank you very much.
And you're not very lovely from where I'm sitting.
Well, don't I smell lovely at the very least? Can't you?
That's why it's an audio podcast.
You have a pleasing aroma.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for your kind words, Jeremy. It's nice to be back. Today, I am joined by, of course, our podcast producer, Jeremy Williams.
Hello, everybody.
Norm, the intern.
Hello.
PC Gamer columnist, Gary Witta.
Hello.
And who the hell else is on the show today, actually?
Nobody.
Nobody
at all. No.
And
you can just ignore me.
And, and Dan Stapleton.
Hi.
Dan Stapleton is now, did we talk about it last time, about Dan's promotion?
It didn't mention it.
Dan has been promoted. Dan is no longer associate, what the hell ever he is, associate editor. Let's start that over, shall we?
Go for it.
Hey, PC Gamer, this is Tom in San Diego.
Let me boost that, hold on.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, PC Gamer, this is Tom in San Diego.
Hello, PC Gamer staff.
Hello.
All right, here we go.